So thank you for coming today. For those of you that don't know, my name is Gary Murphy, and I'm one of the elders here at BIF. And I've been here, coming here now for 3 years, and been working in Baku for 8 years. I work for BP. And my wife is right now in Alaska. And today, what I want to do is talk a little bit about Mark, the monitors. You can cut it. Thank you. Okay. What I want to talk about is a couple of stories. And these stories, one is a biblical story that goes back to 2,500 years ago in the Old Testament. And the second story is one from my life and how the two tie together. Right? My wife right now is in Alaska. She's been there for the last couple of months, helping her mom get moved into a new assisted living place for her. And this story has her in it. And she looked at the slides from last night and sat there going, she prayed for me. So I appreciate the prayers. We know that we've been wanting Pastor to come back now for a few weeks, right? And we continue to pray. We continue to be told that his visas are in work in the process, and we keep getting told in the next week. So continue to keep that in prayer, right? It is one of the things that both Tim and Anita are just, the anxiousness of coming back is strong within them, right? And it is one of the things that we want them back also. So what I'd like to do, well, we prayed for the technology today, so we'll see how well the technology works, right? And I hope you can handle this blessing from me, because over the last 30 years, one of the things that's happened for me is I've been an adult Sunday school teacher, and I've also been a trainer in my part of the business. So what happens is that my slideshows get a little bit more informative as a learning lesson. And because I upload these audio, I'll also upload this to the website. So if you want to see it later on, you can follow along. So let's see if this is titled For Such a Time as This. And this comes from Esther chapter 4. Right? And, For Such a Time as This, we're stuck.
You want to unplug it?
Yeah, unplug it. Yeah, please. And we'll see if and you can push the slide forward. Okay, so the story we're going to be talking about is from the book of Esther. And to set this up, the verses we'll be talking about are from Esther 4. And so to really understand them, I have to kind of set the story and set the stage. So the first thing is that this slide, this map is from the time of Babylonian. The Babylonian Empire. And what's going on is that the setting is Susa, Persia, right? And it's right down here that you see current Iran today is where we're at. And the timing is about 480 BC. So we're about 2,500 years ago that we're talking about. And it's working. So there is a God, and he does believe in technology. So in the main players in the story, right, is there's King Xerxes, and he's also called King Xerxes. And so there's a lot of movies and things like that. You'll hear about Xerxes and his opulence. We'll talk about that a little bit, right? The next one is his queen was Vashti. And what ends up happening to Vashti is that she gets exiled. And it's an important part of the story. And then the king has some wise men, like all kings, but we'll see how wise they were because of some of the things they did, right? And then there's a Jew that, the Jews are in captivity in Babylon right now. And there's a Jew named Mordecai. And Mordecai is important to the story because he's raising his knees. And his niece is named Hadassah, but it's also Esther is her name she goes by in Babylon. And her parents have passed away, and her uncle, or her cousin, Mordecai, is raising her. Right? And like all good stories, there's a villain, right? And Haman, the Agagite, is the villain in the story. So, to kind of move along in the story, those are the players, the main players. And I'm going to kind of talk about the first three chapters and tell you what's going on. So in chapter one, it talks about King Xerxes, and he has basically started his reign, and he has a 20-year reign. In the third year of his reign, he decides to throw a feast and a festival for his officials. And what happens is, and his servants, and this feast lasts 180 days, right? 6 months of feast. That's a big feast, right? So if you stop and think, and you go, how big is the Persian Empire here, right? And at this time, the Persian Empire is basically going from all the way to Turkey, all the way to India, and close to China. So he has a huge empire that he's working from. So he has this feast going on, an 180-day feast. So 7 days into the feast, there's lots of drinking and merriment and whatnot. And he decides that he's at his inner sanctum, and he calls, I'm going to bring my queen in so I can show her off. So he calls in, he wants to bring Queen Vashti in so he can show her beauty to all of the people that are the princes and that are with him. And what she says is, no, I'm not going, right? And the king's going, wait a minute, I'm the king. You can't tell me no, you need to come. And she says, uh-uh, I'm not coming. So what ends up happening is that the king, Xerxes is sitting there talking to his wise men, and he says, what are we gonna do about this? And of course, his wise men said, we can't have women telling us no, right? We have to make it so that she pays. And what we don't want to have happen, because if you allow her to get away with this by saying no, all of the other women will say, well, the queen could say no, so we can say no to our husband, right? So that's why I say the guys are supposed to be wise men, but I would never do that to my wife, right? I'm smart enough to know that if I were to tell my wife, I'm not going to give you the opportunity to say no, right, that would be a bad thing. So, this is where we're at. What they do is they exile Vashti, and they say, okay, what we're going to say is that you can't come back, you can't be in the presence, and you're no longer the queen, right? And so they exile her away, which opens up the opportunity for a new queen. So chapter two starts, the first thing it says is after a time. Well, after a time is about 3 years. And during this time, Babylon went and tried to fight against Greece and lost their battle. So already the king has lost the battle, has lost trying to get more places. And what's happening is that he's not in a very good mood. And what happens is his servants realize that, you know, he's thinking about Vashti, and I've exiled her, and because the king has exiled her, I can't bring her back. So what he says is, I'm sad, I'm doing this. And his servants sit there and go, King, what we should do is we should go out and look for a new queen for you, a young virgin girl that you can have that's beautiful and everything like that. So they basically go out and start looking for a queen, right? And what happens is that all the unmarried women in the empire are looking for this and whatnot, and they're about to have what's the equivalent of a beauty pageant, looking for a new queen. And what happened is, this is where we meet Esther, and she's being raised by her cousin Mordecai, and Esther is described as being beautiful, and she's young. her uncle, her, her, I'm sorry, her cousin, Mordecai, is saying, we should allow you to go to this because it's an opportunity for us. And at that time, what happened is that Esther goes and Mordecai says, don't tell them you're Jewish. Because the Jewish are servants, and we don't want you to be perceived as something that you know, lower than what's going on. So she hides her identity as a Jew, right? And then at the end of the chapter, so Mordecai's, we're in Susa, and we're outside the palace, and Mordecai is sitting by the gates of the palace, and he hears two guards over talking, and what they're planning is to overthrow the king. And what happens is Mordecai hears this, and he says, okay, well, this isn't good, right? If they're going to try and kill the king, and my cousin is there as the queen, that's not good for her. So he tells Esther about it, and Esther goes and tells the king about it. And what happens is that they find the people that are planning to plot against her, and Esther gives Mordecai the acknowledgement that he was the one that found this. So Esther's going, Mordecai is the one that's there. So the king calls the scribe, and he says, write it in the royal chronicles about Mordecai. And Mordecai saved the king through this action. So it gets recorded into the chronicles, and that's going to be important as the story goes on. Right? So that's the end of chapter 2. Chapter 3, we meet Haman. And if you remember, Haman isn't necessarily the best of guys. So, but he was rising up in importance. He was a servant that was working, and he had risen to enough importance that all the people that were working under him had to bow in his presence and give homage to who he was. The king had recognized him at a high enough stature in that. And it kind of went to Haman's head, right? So what happened is Mordecai met Haman, and Mordecai refused to bow to Haman. And Haman didn't like that very well. So his way of getting back against Mordecai was to sit there going, I can't pick out one guy to get a go against, so I'm going to say, let's kill all the Jews. And you're going, okay, I don't want to look bad because I don't like this person, but I'm going to kill everybody in his race. And you're going, oh, wow, that's pretty severe, right? So Haman plots to kill all the Jews, right, to get back at Mordecai. And what Haman does is he convinces the king to make a decree to do this. And they throw dice and they pick a day, and they said, he writes a decree and says, on this day, it'll be okay to kill the Jews. And it's like, oh my gosh, now what am I going to do, right? The Jews are about to be annihilated. And so this is where chapter 4 starts, right? The Jews are there's a decree. It's a king's decree, so we can't take it back. We can't say, nope, we're not doing it. We're going to change it. It is in law, and it's even the king can't take it back. So what happens in the opening of chapter 4, we find Mordecai. And Mordecai's in the middle of the city, and he's mourning. He's in sackcloth and ashes, right? And he's just mourning and wailing. And Esther hears about this, so she sends her servants, right, to go and see him and bring in clothes. And she wants to talk about what's going on. Why are you in such mourning and pain? And what happened, right, is that she sent her servants to go talk to him, right? In the verse, in Esther 4:8, it says, here's Mordecai's reply, right? Mordecai also gives him a copy of the written decree issued in Susa for their destruction, that he might show it to Esther and explain to her and command her to go to the king to beg his favor and plead with him on behalf of her people. And Hathach went and told Esther what Mordecai had said. So the servant has gone, talked to Mordecai. Mordecai said, here's this decree. Look, you need to go talk to the king. Now, if you remember what happened to the last queen that went and talked to the king, right, it didn't go well, or basically back talk. And so it's one of those things that as always, the technology is having fun here. I locked myself out of my computer just a second ago. Here we go. Okay, so what's going on? So Esther sends a reply. And the reply says, thank you. All the king's servants and the people of the king's provinces know that if any man or woman goes to the king inside the inner court without being called, there is but one law, to be put to death. Okay? Except for the one to whom the king holds out this golden scepter so that he may live. Right? So the law is already written that if you go inside without being called, here it is. It's time. You're done. We're going to go. And if you don't think he's going to do it, think about Vashti, right? So what ends up happening, right? When you think about hope, right, what gives us hope, right? The Bible talks about hope, right? Jeremiah 29:11 says, "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope in the future." Right? And then in Psalms 138, it says, "The Lord will fulfill his purpose for me." Now, when I look at those two verses, right, the two things that really stand out to me, right? I know the plans I have for you, right? God has plans for each of us, right? Whether we choose to admit it or not, right? When you look at what's going on, there's plans that the Lord has for us, right? And the Lord will fulfill his purpose for me. So now I have a plan, and I also have a purpose, right? They are very different. I can have a purpose, but not have a plan. I can have a plan, but not have a purpose, right? But when you put the two together, it's an important part of realizing what God is calling me to. So we're going to stop here in Babylon for a second, and we're going to move forward 2,500 years, right? So now we're in Alaska, in the USA, right? And that's where Rochelle and I met, right? And it's the summer of 1995. So 29 years ago, where I'm working is way up on the top. So Prudhoe Bay, so the Arctic Circle kind of goes through Fairbanks here, right? And so to give you an idea what the Arctic Circle is, that's the place where on July 21st, they have 24 hours of sunlight or 24 hours of darkness on December 21st. And I was 200 miles north of that, so during the summer, we'd have 6 weeks of sunlight, and the sun would go down and about 20 degrees above the horizon at night, and we'd see it go around and then come back over the top. And so that's where I worked, and I worked there for a long time. And main players for this play is Jerry, who's me, okay, Rochelle, my wife of 3 years at that point, right, and she was working in Anchorage, and this is where we lived, and from here to here is about 850 miles. So what's going on is that Rochelle and I were trying to start a family, right, and what's been happening is that the first two times she got pregnant, we lost the baby within the first 3 months, right, and for Christians who believe that God has a purpose and a plan, right, and to lose babies, right, it was devastating for us, right, because we're going, God, why are you doing this? What reason, right, and you know our heart. Rochelle will tell you that at that time she wanted to have 20 babies. Jerry did not necessarily want 20 babies, but Rochelle did. Okay, I was just nodding my head up and down. Okay. And what happened, you know, like we said, we're working 850 miles apart. And it was a Monday evening, and I was after work, and I was reading my Bible, and I was in the New Testament. And as I was reading, right, I could hear a voice, and the voice said John David would be a good name. Right? And this was a Monday evening, right? And it was so clear and to me, and I'm going, okay, there's nobody in the room. I'm hearing this. I normally don't hear this, right? I think about it like, you know, when I'm in my Bible and when I'm kind of in the zone and in God's presence, right? It's like a radio, right? And if you remember old radios, you don't see them as much anymore, right? But AM radios that tune in, right? There's lots of static if you're not on the right channel. But when you find the right channel, you hear the music or the messages, right? And I think that I was in the right channel at that moment to have God do something for that. So this is on a Monday for me. So I'm here working 850 miles away, and I get this message. I was working some odd hours, and I get this message from my boss that says, Rochelle needs to talk to you. And we're both working for the same company, and it was the regional manager that was telling me, oh, you need to talk to your wife and everything like that. You know, and we finally got together talking on Thursday. And she said, are you sitting down? And I said, you're pregnant, right? And she's going, how did you know? And I said, I have a name. Okay. So you got to remember, this is the third time, and right, the first two times haven't gone well. Right? So for us to get that, you know, an unexpected announcement is how I said, right? I didn't expect to hear a name, and she didn't expect to hear me say I knew she was pregnant. So it really was one of those things that started us on a journey. So, we'll leave Alaska for a minute. We're going to go back to Esther. Okay. So, remember what's going on in Esther's mind. Okay, Esther, right, the last thing she said is that if I go see the king, right, I could die. Right? Now, anytime we get in starting in something new and something, you know, a brave step into the adventure forward, right? Most of us have challenges with it, right? And Joshua 1:9 talks about this. This is my favorite verse in the Bible, right? And it is, have I not commanded you, be strong and courageous, do not be frightened, do not be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go, right? It doesn't matter where I'm at. Right, I could be in the worst place, but the Lord's with me because I've accepted him, and he's graciously with me all the time, right? And then in the New Testament, James talks about, blessed is the man who perseveres in your trial, because when he has stood the test, he will receive the crown of life that God has promised to those who love him. So when I think about this verse, right, one of the things about it is that it doesn't say there's not going to be trials. Right, there are always going to be trials. The question is, if I put those two verses together, when I'm in that trial, am I trusting in God? Right, because he's already promised me that he'll be there for me. Right, and if that's the case, and I can persevere, right, God says, I will honor you for that. So, with that said, right, when we look at what Esther replied, right, so Esther's replied back to Mordecai saying, I'm going to die if I do this, right? And in the reply back from Mordecai, and they told Mordecai what Esther had said, then Mordecai told them to reply to Esther, do not think to yourself that in the king's palace you will escape any more than any of the other Jews. For if you keep silent at this time, relief and deliverance will rise for the Jews from another place. But you and your father's house will perish. And who knows whether you have not come to the kingdom for such a time as this. Right? So Mordecai is talking back to her and saying, hey, two things about this really stands out, right? The first one is that Mordecai says, if you don't do this, God will have another plan, right? And there's, don't worry, he's made a covenant pact to the Jews that they are his people and he will protect them, right? But then the second part of this says, right, but how do you know that you're not the person that he's put in a place to be able to do this. You're going to have to step out in faith, right? So what ended up happening, so Esther replies back and says, then Esther told them to reply to Mordecai, go gather all the Jews to be found in Susa and hold a fast on my behalf. And do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. I and my young women will also fast as you do. Then I will go to the king, though it be against the law, and if I perish, I perish. Right? Mordecai went away and did everything as Esther had ordered him. So Esther's telling Mordecai, okay, if I'm going to do this, you have to help me. Right? We need to gather all the Jews. We need to have them fast for 3 days. Right? When you stop and think and go, okay, how many of you have fasted for a day or two? Right? And now we're saying, everybody in the room, you need to go fast for 3 days. And they're all looking, going, really? I'm hungry? And it is very much that's there. But the thing was, is that if I'm going to risk my life, right, I want God to be on my side. I want to show God the commitment that we have to be there. So we're going to leave Esther for 3 days. Let them go fast. And we'll go talk about Alaska. So where we were, there we go. So Alaska, at 3 months, what happened? The babies were 3 months into it, which is where we had lost the other two babies, right? And Rochelle started showing signs that we may be losing this one. And at that time, she was showing blood, and it was one of those things that there was, I don't want to say we were freaking out, but there was a lot of, God, why, right? And what had happened is that my parents had come up, and we were supposed to go on a trip with them, and Rochelle stayed at home, and I went on the trip with my parents. But what we did is we prayed, and we prayed, and we prayed. Because at this point, we're going, okay, Lord, please come through. For me, I trust God had given me a name, and I trust in God in what I heard, right? Now, maybe I wasn't right or things like that, but what happened is God answered our prayers, right? And we made it through that time, and the baby was still alive, right? And we're going forward, and this is great because we're further. We're past that first trimester. We're into the next trimester. And now what's going on is that we went a couple more months, and now we're going to go do the ultrasound. We're at 5.5 months, and Rochelle's kind of going, we're going to do an ultrasound, and if it's not a boy, Jerry's going to be really depressed. Right? And I'm sitting here going, if it's not a boy, it just means that sometime in the future, God will deliver a boy. But deep down inside, there was part of me sitting there going, I have faith, right? And yeah, it was a boy. So, you know, I trust that God had a boy plan in our life. He'd already given me commitment for that. So, we're kind of moving forward on that. So, one of the things about this is that when you think about purpose, right, Esther, we're seeing her purpose and what is to say the Jewish race, right? You know, Jerry right now, his purpose is to bring a message to people that walk pastors away. It's not quite the same magnitude, but at the same time, it's the same God, right? And Paul talked about it in the New Testament. You know, in Romans, he talks about, and we know that for those who love God, all things work together for good, for those who are called according to his purpose, right? So everyone in here that claims to be a Christian, right, we're called for a purpose. In 1 Corinthians, Paul talked about, according to the grace of God given to me, like a skilled master builder, I laid a foundation, and someone else is building upon it. Let each one take care of how he builds upon it. So when I think about this, right, God called me, God has a plan, and he's got a purpose. And the thing about this is that I may not be the person that brings that. I may only bring a small part of this, right? So if I think that I can't do this because I can't do all of it, right, it's for me to try and figure out what God's saying to me. And ultimately, what it's a bad thing because what's happening is I'm implying my will in the problem, and it really is God's will that we're trying to work with. And so Paul said it, right? We work with masters all the time here in Azerbaijan, right? Here he talks about laying a foundation, right? But someone else comes on and adds to it. It's the same thing in the Christian faith, right? When we plant seeds, we aren't always the ones that sow the seed. But there are planters, there are sowers, and there are tillers in the field, right? And all of us can play those parts. More about this, okay? 2 Corinthians, Paul talked about, we are therefore Christ's ambassadors, as though God were making his appeal through us. So if you don't think that you have a purpose, then you're a Christian, you're at least an ambassador of Christ, right? I know that we have many foreign ambassadors that come to BIF, right, who represent their countries and whatnot. As a Christian, I'm an ambassador for Christ, right? What they see, what the outside world sees through me, is hopefully Christ. And then the last part about this, 2 Corinthians, Paul talked about, we walk by faith, not by sight. Yes, we are of good courage, and we would rather be away from the body and at home with the Lord. So whether we are at home or away, we make it our aim to please him. So if I'm trying to please God, and I'm trying to please Jesus, I'm looking at, what's my purpose in your plan? Right? Recognizing I do have a purpose is that first step. So, kind of to sum up the rest of the Esther story, okay? So, remember we're praying, we did the 3 days of fasting. So, chapter 5, the Esther prepares a banquet, and she invites the king and Haman to come to the banquet. She says, I want to prepare a banquet for you. And the king allowed her to live. He was thankful. And what's happening? And during this time, Haman's going, it's so cool because it's just the king and I, right? I am at the top of the food chain here, just short of the king, you know? And so she prepares a banquet for that first day for the king. And then Esther asks the king and Haman to come to a second banquet the next day, right? The king said to her, he said, what do you want? I will give you half of the kingdom, right? And she said, what I want is to have you and Haman come to the next day. So Haman, again, is going, yes, I'm in, I'm great. So what happens is that on Haman's way home, he sees Mordecai again, right? And once again, Mordecai failed to acknowledge him and to bow to him. And when Mordecai gets home, he talks to his staff and servants, and they're saying, you know, you should just, tomorrow when you see the king, you should just say, I want to kill this man because he does not acknowledge me. Because I think of myself here, right, and he treats me like I'm here. So they sit there and go, yeah, that's a great idea. So what we're going to do is that we're going to go make a gallows, right? We're going to go make a structure so that we can hang him tomorrow. And we're going to put it right next to the palace. So chapter 6 comes. And then the king, what happens is that while Haman's having this structure built outside, right, the king can't sleep. Deep down inside, I think probably building the structure is what's keeping the king from being able to sleep. You know, and it's one of the things that the king can't sleep, and he says, call a scribe, And let's read from the Royal Chronicles. So the scribes are reading from the Royal Chronicles and telling the stories, and they come to, and Mordecai saved your life, right? He told us about the plot against you, and the king went, well, what have I done for Mordecai? I haven't done anything for him. And he's going, oh, okay, stop here, right? Let's see what we can do about it. And so when Haman comes in, and he happened to be in the inner part of the palace, Haman came in, and the king calls for him and says, hey, come here. What should I do for a guy that I am so honored by that I want to honor him at the highest level, right? What should I give him and everything like that? And Haman thought, he's talking about me, right? This is good stuff for me. So what I would like is, I think you should do for this person, you should put one of your robes on him that you've worn, and we're going to put him on a horse and parade him around the city to acknowledge what an honor and what greatness he has because he has saved you. And the king goes, yeah, that sounds like a really good idea. So he tells Haman, okay, can you go get Mordecai and honor him, put the robe around him, and you get to take him around the city, right? And Haman's going, what did I do? Right? How is this working out? You know, but God does those twists, right? He takes the high and brings them down. He takes the low and brings them up. And it's one of the things that now Haman is being recognized, you know, okay, I have to do this. So chapter 7, now we have the second feast. And at the second feast, Esther tells the king, and she said, here's what I want, right? It's the feast is going on and everything like that. There's a plot, or there's a decree to kill all the people that are of my race. And she discloses that she's Jewish, right? And they're going, you're Jewish. Oh, but who? And the king's going, who would do this? And everything like that. And Haman's there, it's just the king, Haman, and Esther. And she goes, him, right? He's the guy that is doing this plotting for all of this, right? And what happens is that it ultimately becomes Haman is not handling this well. He's kind of freaking out. And what ends up happening is that he ends up, Esther's over on the couch, and he ends up over, I don't know if he's pushing her or whatnot. The king comes back from his rage, and he sees that Haman is, in his mind, molesting his queen. So he says, I'm sorry, we're going to go hang you in that gallows, right? So what ended up happening is Haman is gone, right? The Jews still have to fight for themselves, right? We can't do this. But what they did later on in the next couple of chapters, they said the Jews can defend themselves, right? And it's okay. They will not be late, because if people come to kill them, it's okay for them to defend themselves. And then afterwards, they actually got a second day where they said, you can go attack the people that are persecuting you. And you're going, how did this happen, right? This only happens because God had a plan where, if you think back way, Esther has to be in the right spot. Mordecai has to be in the right spot to hear the plan against the king. And for all of this to tie together, the book of Esther is the only book that doesn't bring God forward as a story, right? But when you read it, you see God working all the way through it, underneath, in the background. It's you can't plan things like this without God being in there. So that's the rest of Esther's story. So let me talk about the rest of Jerry's story. Okay. So it's February in 1996. It's 6 weeks before the baby's due. And I'm working up in Prudhoe Bay, and it's Valentine's Day, so February 14th in the U.S., and Rochelle has told me, she says, I'm sending you a present tomorrow. And normally what she did is she would make cookies, and she would put it on the charter flight that goes up there and send cookies. And that's what she meant, right? But what ended up happening, you know, I'm 1,380 kilometers away or 850 miles away, right? And that night at 1 o'clock in the morning, I get a phone call saying, you need to answer this phone call. And the phone call is from Rochelle, and the water is broken. And she's working as a nurse right now at a hospital in Anchorage, and her water's broken. And because we're delivering, and this, and they're considering us a high-risk pregnancy because of the other things that were going on, our doctor only delivered at the other hospital in Anchorage, which was across town. So Rochelle went in her scrubs, right, went to the other hospital, gets checked in, and basically labor started. And I talked to her from 3 o'clock to 5 o'clock that morning, and as we're talking, you know, the baby's coming, progressing, we get to a spot where at 5 o'clock in the morning, I have to hang up, I talk to the hospital room for 2 hours. At 5 o'clock in the morning, I'm going, okay, I need to go work out the plans to get me home so that I can be there. So I talked to all the people, and they were able to get me on the first flight. And the first flight wasn't leaving until 9:30 in the morning, and then that puts me in Anchorage at 11:30, so we're talking about 7 hours from now. And at this point, Rochelle's about 7 centimeters dilated. And for pregnancy at 10 centimeters dilated, they consider it full and the baby's coming. So I'm going, okay, God, you're in control. You've been in control all the time, you know. So I race to get home. So I get on the airplane the last thing at about 9 o'clock in the morning, and I talk to the room, and they tell me the pregnancy has stalled. We're at 8 centimeters dilated. It hasn't progressed anymore in the last little bit. So we're going, okay. I'm going, okay, I'm planning to be on an airplane for 2.5 hours. There's nothing I can do. I can't talk to anybody. God, you're in control. I'm not going to worry about it because I know you've been in control all along. So I land at 11:20 in the morning, and my brother-in-law met me. This is 1996, so you could still go all the way to the gate to meet people, right? It wasn't at the way at the other end of the airport. He met me at the airport, and I come running up, and I ask him what's going on. He says, I don't know. And he hands me the cell phone, and I had bought a 1996 cell phone. It's about the size of a brick, right? It's about half the size of this. And so he gives it to me, and it is only by God that I remembered the number for the room, right? And I call, and I sit there, and I said, Howard, what's going on? And they're going, you know, Rochelle's pushing, she's 10 centimeters dilated, we're going, and I'm going, okay, deep breath, right? Steve and I start running through the airport. I know she was getting close to time for the baby, when from the time we went to the gate to the time to the front door of the airport, she had already asked me 3 times, where are you? Right, and I'm going, I'm not gonna get there fast enough. Right, and we're going, and thankfully my brother-in-law's driving, because if I'd have been driving, I'd have ended up in the hospital. Yeah. And so God's, and I'm just sitting here praying and listening and talking on the phone, and everything's going on, and it's about a 20-minute drive to the hospital. So we're going to the hospital, and we get there, or we got about 1 kilometer away, and I can see the hospital in the distance. And the thought came to me, and all of a sudden I was going, oh, this is going to be horrible, right? If I'm this close and the baby's born and I come in, I don't know how I'm going to feel, right? I'm trusting God all the way, but now I'm thinking about Jerry. And it's, how do I feel? And it's traveling, and it's trusting. I'm sitting there going, okay, Lord, you're in control. You're driving the wheel here. So we get to the front door of the hospital, And Steve drops me off, and I run into the hospital. And as I'm running into the hospital, right, I have to turn off my cell phone. And the last thing I hear Rochelle say is, I have to push now, right? It's, I have to push, right? So, okay, this is it. Now, the only thing that saved me was right before I went to work up on the North Slope, Rochelle and I had gone to the hospital, and I knew where labor and delivery was in the hospital. So I at least knew I didn't have to ask for directions or anything like that. So I'm here running through the hospital, get to the elevator, press the button, and had to wait, right? I'm waiting for the elevator. I didn't know where the stairs were. Okay. Things to think about next time. But at this point, right, I'm at there, I get on the elevator. The elevator presses the third floor. We get to the third floor. The nurse grabs me and runs me out, right, and runs me to the room. And as I run into the room, the nurse announces to everybody, says, the father's here. And the doctor looked up and said, the father's here now, right? And what has happened, right, is that Rochelle was in her last push. And after I arrived, I took out my coat, went and gave her a kiss. Right, and 30 seconds later, here's John being born. Right, and it was one of those things that when I look at that, and I go, how do you plan that? Could I plan that well? And I go, no, there's no way. And for me to have seen the beginning, where I have a name given to me, to the end, where 30 seconds from the end, right, God's allowed me to see this, right? Right. God's timing is perfect, and his plan is perfect, right? I could never, as a human, have done that. And for me to sit there and say, oh, it is just luck. I'm sorry, I can't buy that. I don't know how to make a universe without a God. What I do love is the fact that God can be so personal that he can help me see something like this. Now, because God knew, so it's been 30 years, right? And as I get older, my memory goes and whatnot. What happened is that the Anchorage Daily News heard about it. And they wrote an article about the father who made it in just seconds to go, right? So if you don't believe my story, here's my verification part, right? Now, here's what I feel bad about, right? In that picture is young Jerry, right? There's no gray hair yet, but that gray hair was kind of coming as the kids come, right? And I'm holding John, right? And I felt really bad because deep down inside, Rochelle did all the work, right? And here we were taking credit for the story. But it's one of those things that you go, it was so perfect, right, that we recorded it and we could share it and we could show people that here's God's grace, here's God's goodness. The article doesn't talk about the first part of the story, right? And that's why it's important for me to share it here, right? Is that the story, they talk about me showing up just in time. Showing up just in time is only part of the story, right? It's having the faith and understanding that there's a plan. So why did God give me this, right? Right, why is for such a time as this, right? When I look it back and go, what will I talk about when I'm asked to cover for pastor? I can talk about this, right? Now, one of the things that happened, to continue the story a little bit further, 10 years later, I always looked at John's birth and I sat there going, God's probably got something really special planned for him, right? And I'm going, because of the way he worked it out and everything. And what happened is that we were, 10 years later, the general superintendent for our denomination came to our church. It was like having the Pope come to our church. And it was, he prayed for John and I, and John put on his three-piece suit, and he was all in, wanted it to be prayed for and everything like that. And
And I sat there and in the background, I sit there going, knowing this story and whatnot, and I was going, God, I don't know what you have planned for him, but it's got to be something special, right? And God, the Spirit really hit me over the head, right? And what the Spirit said to me, he said, I didn't do this for John, right? I did this for you, right? John and I will have our own experience, right? What I did is so that when you have times where you're in doubt or having troubling times, that you'll have something to fall back on, that you'll know I was there, that you'll know, right? It's faith without seeing, right? In knowing this. So that's my story for today, right? And when I look back at both Esther and myself, right, you step out in faith, right? You believe that God has a plan and God has a purpose. When God hit me, kind of hit that over the head, right, it's when I recognized that maybe I didn't step out enough in purpose, right? I didn't recognize, I trusted his plan, but purpose is me allowing him to use me in that plan. And there are days that it's hard sometimes to be that person, right? A lot of times we want to look in and go, where's God in this, right? If you were to look at this in from just outside perspective, you'd never see God. But when you look at it from the inside, that's when you see God moving through our lives. Thank you for that. I think we have one more song. Mm-hmm.